welcome to Trick Talkers, a podcast about trick takers, shedders, climbers, and other card games. My name's Ryan.
My name's Patrick, aka Horse Boy, because today I sound like a horse. I've got a flu, cold, but here we are.
Here we are, recording away. The dedication from Patrick is overwhelming. I love it.
Nodding my head like an average horse.
Trying to keep the voice.
Trying to keep the voice for all the great content we've got ahead of ourselves.
Yes. And with that in mind, we're going to have this be a little shorter of an episode so that Patrick's voice isn't completely gone by the end of it. So what we're actually going to talk about today are two games that are a little bit simpler or lighter in the rules sense, but games that we both really enjoyed and played recently. One of them being a very old game, too. I think, do we want to just jump into that one right away? Start with your game, Patrick?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, this is a game that was originally released in 2001. It's got a very obscure sounding name. That name is Alphysia Theatre. I'm pretty sure I nailed that pronunciation, Ryan. What do we think?
That was pretty good. And there was no Google Translate involved at all with that.
There we go. I didn't say Scooty Fruit or any other kind of variation along like... It's amazing what you can do without Google nowadays. So there was a re-release of that game. And since that game was re-released, I've hardly heard a peep about the game. It's hardly talked about. And it's a shame because that game was unboxed, Ryan, last weekend. We had a good time with it. I better tell you who the designer is, and I better give you a bit more information about the game so that you can appreciate the context of this lovely little trick taker. So the designer, my pronunciation skills are going to come into hand again, was Jürgen Kraul, there we go. And it was recently published by Suki Games. And there is a lovely little backstory. This game is often pronounced in English incorrectly. It's got a quirky name. I'm going to say Wrong Ride, I believe, is the rough translation for this game. And this game is all about trick-taking, but you don't know whether you want to avoid tricks or take tricks until it plays out. So I'll give you a basic synopsis of the game, and then I'll tell you a little bit about the quirky backstory that goes with it. So how to play Wrong Ride. There's my horse kicking in there, Ryan, as you can see, as horses do tend to kick in occasionally throughout the episode. I'm sure it become more apparent.
I'm just waiting for the squeaky voice. When your voice cracks, that's the part I'm waiting for.
Squeaky voice. Just, yeah, I'll pause for a carrot and then I'll carry on. So how to play Wrong Ride. You all are going to be dealt some cards, as you tend to do in these games. You're then going to put a card in the middle, and the total value of the cards that are placed in the middle, because every player is going to do it, will be checked, and the cards are going to get turned over as the game goes on. By the fifth trick, everybody in a four-player game is going to know the total value of the cards that were put in the middle. And if that value is 24 or more, then the winner of the round will be the person who has won the most tricks. If that value is 23 or less, it will be the person who's took the lowest amount of tricks. And then a bit later on, throughout the trick-taking, the person who is in the worst position will have the opportunity to change the trumps. That trump is set at the start of the round. The deck makeup's very similar to a normal deck of cards, apart from the fact you've got lovely, gorgeous artwork on it that was done by Yusuke Mamada in a Phantom Thief theme and helped out by Sai Beppu. So love what they've done to the art.
Yeah, new version looks fantastic.
It's really nice. Kind of gives you the Sherlock Holmesy vibe, Midsummer Murders, Agatha Christie, depending on where you're from. It gives you that vibe.
Yeah, the box cover just has like the investigator with his magnifying glass looking at a piece of paper, probably a clue or something. And there's a guy behind him looking all mischievous, like he's up to something.
Up to no good, like me most of the time, but digressing. It's all about this Phantom Thief, Ryan. I haven't seen many Phantom Thieves before, but if there was one, then this game is perfectly suited for it.
There's one in the Trick Takers expansion.
There is one in the Trick Takers expansion. That is a very good shout. And if anybody was going to point that out, it'd certainly be you, because I know how much you obviously love this game. Me included, that expansion has yet to be opened on my end. But going back to the Phantom Thief at play here, they also include a variant, which is kind of the main game for some people. Some people like to play it with jokers, where the first and second joker allow you to change the trump instead of the person in the worst position later on during the round. And of course, duck out a few tricks as well. If you like a bit more chaos, you've got the jokers in there as well. The backstory behind the game was all about the Japanese publisher chasing down the original designer of the game, Ryan. Apparently, here's this for a clue, and we've talked about the Sherlock Holmes kind of vibe. Well, this resonates through the whole game publishing, because apparently the original designer was somewhere in Germany, somewhere in Berlin. It's like the best clue ever, isn't it? He's basically picked one of the most populous cities in the world and say, well, I think the designer's there.
Yeah. Just where's Carmen Sandiego? But where's Jürgen Kral?
Well, exactly. Where's Poirot? Right. They managed to track him down. A letter got through to one of his old addresses. And then apparently he got in touch and said, oh, I'd absolutely love to have a Japanese version of my game. Hadn't had much to do with the board game industry for 20 years. And at the time, had only released this game, according to the story from Suki Games. So isn't it great? Because they took a big risk with this. They republished it. And it found its way into a deck box on my shelf, because of course I sleeved it. And you can't fit it all back in the box. I'm terrible for this, but I did. And we played it. And we played it a few times. The Joker variant, there was one guy at our table who never got a Joker. I think he got one once. I ended up with all the Jokers nearly every round. And you could just see the rage on his face when it sort of betted against all the other players to go for the least amount of tricks. We'd always gone for the most amount of tricks. And he got angrier and angrier as the gameplay went on, in a playful way, of course. You know, that's...
Yeah, it sort of sounds like the boast or nothing problem that some people have with the pass cards, how they're randomly dealt out to people. Some rounds people will get two of them or all three, depending on your player count. And people always think it's unfair. It's easier to lose tricks when you get those cards. And I can see how that could be an issue in this one, too.
Yeah, if you want it to feel a little bit more balanced and a little bit more Care Bear, then you would play with the classic rules where you just literally say, you know, whoever's in the worst position, change trump. The jokers make it wildly chaotic. They do make it a little bit more exciting, but I like the chaos, so that's not for everybody. Some people swear by the joker variant. Some people, the small pool of people who've commented on this game, because like you said, I've hardly heard a whisper about it in recent months. I'm guessing, Ryan, from your playstyle, you like the chaos a bit, don't you? I'm guessing you'd probably go lean towards the Joker side of things. Have you played this?
Yeah, I've actually played this game once before, back in July of this year. So relatively recently, a couple months ago. But we played without the Jokers.
Okay.
I think just knowing about how the Jokers work, I probably would like it more that way. Because again, I'm also someone who likes chaos. I don't mind that as much. Yeah. So I think that if I was to play it again, I'd probably want to do with the Jokers. But I still enjoyed my single play of even with the other normal rule set.
Sure, yeah. I mean, this is a game that you can literally play with pretty much anyone. As far as complexity is concerned, there's not a big teach there, is there, Ryan? It's super simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very straightforward, must follow trick taking, with the extra twist being that what's the number going to reach? Is it going to hit that threshold to determine winning the most tricks or winning the least amount of tricks? So the strategy and like thought process in the game is a little bit more deep, but for rule set wise, I think it's a very simple game to learn or to teach.
Yeah, people immediately sat down and played it straight away. And I played this with a couple of people who don't play that many trick takers. Obviously, they play a little bit more than normal because they know me, but one of them certainly rarely plays trick taking games. That was also weirdly considered the favourite game of the evening. We did play Trick Raiders. I'm not going to go into it too much because no doubt we're going to cover that on another episode, which has a little bit more rule set. But sometimes it's the simple games that can actually elicit the best response. And I say simple, and I don't want to do this game any disservice because actually entertainment factor is really, really, really high. And not knowing, certainly the first or second card that gets turned over and you're wondering what direction it's going to go in, and then when it's sort of hanging on a knife edge, is it going to be avoidance? Is it going to be taking? Super exciting. So it really does feel like a ride, a roller coaster. The game name does kind of capture that.
Yeah, the decisions in those first few tricks can be really fun for the table, all kind of like looking at the card as it gets flipped. What's going to be next? What's going to be next? And counting it all up. And it usually some people at their table are more excited than others.
Right, yeah, it's that exactly. It's that spice. And do you let on? You know, the first trick you play into, the second trick you play into, third trick. Do you play as someone who has put a high or low card in? Do you act, you sort of play a middling card and pretend you're none the wiser? You think people are looking at you and sort of accusing you and finger pointing, and it's great. The banter is great. That is the spice. So this is a game that's well worth a look. Not to be overlooked. Get your magnifying glass out and look at it like Sherlock Holmes would and think, yeah, I want to investigate this a bit further. And if you do, I believe it's still readily available, Ryan. I haven't checked as of today's date. I'm hoping it is. And a small Japanese publisher, and well worth a look for sure.
And that would be readily available as an import, so keep that in mind. I don't think this one is a travelgames.co.uk or tricky imports or anything. So even if it is available, you'd have to be doing your usual Japanese importing. But I'm trying to see if it is available anywhere. Yes, it is available on Jelly Jelly Cafe. Looks like they still have some copies available.
Cool, yeah. So it's still available. And one thing I did forget to mention, it comes with a load of little bus tickets, a little trump deck that you can shuffle at the start of each round, as well as you're obviously going to shuffle the cards people have put in. So there's that mystery element of not knowing who's put what in. But the little bus tickets just augment the experience. You just lay them out on the table, and if you win a trick, you take them. And some of them have got colours on them to remind you which tricks to turn over and when trump changes if you're not playing with the joke. So I thought there was a really nice little thematic touch that don't serve any purpose. They're just there to draw people in and have that shared experience.
Yeah, I should actually point out the one play I had was online. So I do own a copy of this new version physically. So I should get it played again to have that fun tactile thing. Because, yeah, those little tickets are really cooler.
Yeah, and I'm using, because the rules are in Japanese, but don't worry, the game is language independent. There is some English rules on BGG, which is what I was using. And every time it says chip on there, I sort of changed it to, crossed it out and put bus ticket or whatever. And, you know, there's a little trump deck, which, so great production. Just obviously don't be afraid of the rule set because it's that simple. And speaking of simpler games, Ryan, I know the game that you're going to talk about also shares that in common, which is why it's really great to talk about these two games in this episode.
Yeah, the game I'm going to talk about is going to be Flip Over, and that is designed by Shiro Yamaoka. And this is a game that I've actually owned for a little over a year and a half. And was one of the ones on my unplayed list of games that I needed to get played. And boy, oh boy, am I upset for not having played this sooner.
You should have flipped the table over, Ryan, for not playing it sooner.
I should have. Really upset at myself for that. And so I actually played this last night in my weekly Monday night trick-taking group. And we ended up playing four games in the night. We played Trick Take, Bird and Weather, Flip Over, Mino Dice, and Inflation, which is the reprint of Zimbabwe Trick.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason why I'm specifically talking about this one is because Flip Over was the hit of the night for everybody. Trick Take, Bird Weather was okay. And I don't really want to talk too much about the other three games because that's not what I'm here for. But the idea is that Flip Over was a simple game, whereas Trick Take Bird Weather was like so needlessly complicated that you're explaining so many of these additional exceptions that might happen in the game that don't usually happen. And it was really annoying to have to spend half of the game teaching something that only showed up like one or two times. And we sort of talked about this before on like Tanuki Dachagum.
Yeah.
And how like if the twist of your game doesn't ever happen, like that's what makes it different is that twist. And the twist never comes into play. So having to learn this entire rule set of something that doesn't happen is a little annoying sometimes. So at least with Flip Over was amazing because it just always happened. So to go into actually what the game is, so you can get some context here. We were playing with four players, so I'm actually going to explain the team rules. If you're playing at the other player counts and also four, you can play it individually. But we did the 2v2, which was really good, and I think it's the way I would recommend the first time you can play it if you do. But essentially, there are these tokens that are numbered from 1 to 10, and the deck makeup is four suits 1 to 10 that match those tokens. At the beginning of the hand or the beginning of a round, you're going to flip those tokens to either the blue or the red side. Blue is positive, red's negative. Whatever the number is on that token, that's how much it's going to be worth positively or negatively for your team's points. So again, it's 1 through 10 of the tokens, which also match the cards in your hand. So if the 1 is blue, the 5 is blue, the 7 is blue, those are all positive, the other ones are going to be negative. And you take the tricks in order from 1 to 10. So the very first trick, you're playing over 1 point. Second trick's 2 points, then 3, then 4, all the way up to 10. But again, whether it's positive or negative depends on what side it was flipped on.
Okay.
And the other little twist to it is that whatever the number is also the trump for that trick. So the first trick, the number 1 cards are trump. Second trick, number 2s are trump. Third trick, 3s are trump. So on and so forth, all the way to 10. So it's must follow, but if you can't follow, you could play off suit and play the number that matches the trick you're on, and you'd trump into the trick. If there's a tie, it's always later played wins. But like, that's it. Those are the rules. After you play your 10 tricks, you add up your team's points. And then I guess, okay, sorry. There's one other really fun twist to it, I guess, is flipping over the tokens and then keeping your hand. Right. So the first 10 tricks, you keep your hand. You don't collect the tricks when you win. Each player just takes their card and puts it face down in front of them. Because the second 10 tricks, you take your cards back into your hand and you're going to replay those 10 cards again. But now all of the point tokens are flipped over. Anything that was positive is now negative. Anything that was negative is now positive. And you just play through those 10 tricks. You add up your score again and you can play as many rounds as you feel like. We ended up just doing 2 full rounds, so 4 hands, and most points wins at the end.
That is spicy. So how do you determine then? Is it the teams go back and forth and at the start then choose which position to flip certain chips in?
So yeah, there is in the rule set a way to make sure that you have the tokens evenly. So there can't be 3 in a row of the same positive or negative. There has to be an equal number of positive and negative. So pretty much it just alternates. If the first trick's positive, the second one's negative, third's positive, negative, positive, all the way through. But that's what they recommend the first time you play. You can just do random if you want. And that's actually what we did on the third and fourth hand. So the second round of play, we just literally threw the tokens up in the air and how they landed is how it was. So we ended up having like 7 of them be negative and 3 of them are positive until they got flipped over and switched.
Wow. Okay. And then obviously the negative trumps of things you got to be really afraid of, because then of course you're then scoring negative points for your team.
Absolutely. The 10 being the highest point value is so scary when it's the negative points, but when it's the positive, you're like looking forward to it and really excited when you can hold on to it. But the thing is, because the trick numbers are in order, it always goes 1 to 10. You're usually holding on to your higher numbers later in the hand to get the ability to trump in with them. But because you use the exact same hand, for potential card counters or other people who are paying attention, you can know what other people have. You saw their 10 cards. They're picking it back up and replaying it.
Yeah.
So if you remembered maybe they were short suited in something, you can use that to your advantage or disadvantage. Because again, in the team play, what we were doing, we could use that to our advantage, knowing our teammate was out of something, lead a color they were out of and then know that they could trump in on it.
So it's almost like a Groundhog Day, the trick taker, right? These are your cards. Remember them because you're getting them back.
Yeah, a little bit. And I know that could obviously put some people off. So I always, as soon as I like a game, especially when my entire group, because like I said, all four of us love this game. Like, we're still talking about it today. Okay. A couple of people want to buy a copy of it. Like, it was enjoyed by all. So I want to make sure that the hype level is put to a regular level, because there are still some things about this game that somebody might not enjoy. The fact that, again, like I said, card counters. If somebody's not good at remembering what other players have versus somebody, if you're playing against somebody who can remember everything, you just might get upset by that, knowing that somebody could have a slight advantage over you on card play. Or if you get those players that get upset when your teammate, especially in the teammate, where they don't remember,
right?
Like, oh, you should have remembered I didn't have this color. Why'd you play that or something like that? You know, potentially could happen.
Yeah, of course. But much less serious than a local bridge club, right? When you sort of like let the side down.
Yeah, way, way less cutthroat for sure.
And obviously, if you're good at Nana and you've got a great memory, then obviously this plays into that and remembering cards, like you say. It's weird because the irony is if you're a good card counter, then you'll be good at the game. But then also at the same time, it's lighthearted and kind of a little bit. Is chaotic the right word? Flipping the tokens over? And I mean, it's known, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's all, you know, the order because it's always 1 to 10, and that's what I'll get to in a second. But it's always 1 to 10, and there's only the 4 suits. You have seen them for the most part. So it is pretty straightforward. I don't think it's actually that chaotic at all. I mean, I'd say that there's more strategy into it because of the fact trying to time the tricks right based on what's positive and negative. Because when you're leading a trick, sometimes that can be bad. If you just won a trick that was positive points and you're playing with the regular rule set, the next trick's going to be negative. So if you lead something, even if it's a low suit, and even if it's the first hand, you don't know what everyone else has, they might be out of those suits and purposely play off suit that's not a trump to make you win it back. So like what would happen in our game is sometimes like someone would win positive 6 points. And the very next trick, they would get the negative 7 points.
Cancel it out.
And basically cancel it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So trying to keep my tangent in stream, I always get my thoughts going everywhere. So to bring it back in.
So you don't flip out and over. Yeah.
So the other part that I was going to say that people might not like is the fact that it is in exact order, 1 to 10 every time. Because of that, it makes it a little bit predictable.
Right.
Knowing that the bigger points are at the end and the earlier tricks are worth the least amount, but that's also the time where you have the most cards in your hand. So when the points are worth the most is when you're more likely to be off-suited because you only have 2-3 cards left. So it's easier for people to potentially trump in on those if they kept that number or not be able to follow at all and the person just wins easily. So what we did is actually reordered the tokens as well as randomizing their positive and negative. So it was still 10 tricks, but instead of being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, we literally just tossed the discs up in the air and then put them in a line randomly. So it was 1, 8, 4, 7, 9, 3, 2, 10 or whatever. The trump number stayed the same. So like the second trick, if it said 7, the trump was 7. Whatever the disc showed was the trump for that trick. But at least the order was a little different. So the timing was spicier.
So that, Ryan, has got your signature all over it. I knew you would find a way to make it a little bit more chaotic than the original rule set, but I like it. That's quite spicy. Because my question that I was going to ask you, I was going to say, well, you know, I assume you're sat on the table, then you've got the opposite teammate, and then your teammate, and then, you know, sort of, so you're not all kind of sat next to each other. Question was, does it kind of play out the same? You know, the 1 to 10, is there the right playability there? And straight away, you've basically come in and said, well, you just chuck it all up in the air and see what happens. That sounds wild, but I like that. And I saw this game probably a couple of years ago, year and a half ago, when I was first getting into trick taking. There's a little Japanese kid in the corner thing.
Oh my God, how have I not even mentioned that part? That's like,
yeah, there's a little kid in the corner.
That was the whole reason why I bought it. So sorry, I don't mean to cut off your buying story, but like that's about the same time I looked it up because of that kid. So, but sorry, yeah, go ahead. just got excited over that.
No, and did you think the same as me? Oh, there's a kid in the corner. How good can it be? Is it for children, or is this game actually any good? Because what people at home are probably going to do now is they're going to go on BGG and they're going to put in flip over
with a space,
or as it, yeah, or furupu oba in my best Japanese. And they're going to look at it and they're going to see, oh, well, as of current day, this score was only 6.6. And people look, and the thing is, I feel like this has probably gone under the radar a little bit, just because not many people have talked about it. There's hardly any reviews for it, so the score's probably a bit unfair anyway from that perspective. But you've got me excited to want to try it, and hopefully other people will want to try it and probably chuck those things in the air and see where they land like you did as well and have a good time.
Yeah. I think it's funny though that you saw it with the kid and I immediately blind purchased it because of that. So I had the instinct that you did, but instead of backing away from it, I bought it and then let it sit on my shelf for a year and a half. But I've continued to use that emoji. I made a flip over kid emoji in the PGC Discord server and our TikToker server, and I use it all the time. And it's so good. And he's just a cute little kid on the front of the box that's so excited to play flip over. And obviously, when we were playing the game last night, we had the box propped up so that the cover was like facing out, looking at everybody. So we were all commenting on it. Yeah, it's great. It's a good time. Obviously, this one's going to be a little bit harder to find and you're going to have to import it from Japan as well. But I do know there are copies available on Jelly Jelly as well. So both of these games that we've talked about are there. So if you are doing an import order, you can get it all from one place.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be flipping a few copies. I'm going to get criticized at the end of the episode if I don't make a few puns in here. But yes, you've reignited that flame for me. And it's just funny how we came to the same conclusion from looking at the same box and what kind of response that elicits from potential purchasers of these games, as we are. And we've certainly been heavy-handed purchasers, I think it's fair to say, throughout the last sort of couple of years.
Absolutely. And there is another version, I guess, or variant, or another way to play the game in the box.
Different it's kid called, on the front?
Same kid, same box, same game. It's two games in one, essentially. The other game is called Kick and Rush, and it's a soccer-themed game. These rules haven't been translated, which is why I haven't played that part yet, even though it's taken me this long to play regular flip-over. But there are additional components in the game where one of those tokens has a soccer ball on it, and there's like a home and away card that you can keep score with. I don't really know most of the rules to it. Again, the rules haven't been translated. On the Jelly Jelly website, it does give you a brief overview of what Kick and Rush is, and it looks like it's another 2v2 team game. So I'm excited to eventually try to translate those rules and get that played.
So then you can use that emoji when you get another one for that version with authority, like you can with the flip over version now.
That'd be great.
Just had images of a box lid, a box front, and then you've kind of flicking these number chips into the goal. I'm pretty sure that's not how the Japanese rules have
it. It's definitely not a dexterity game. I believe it's still just a regular old trick-taking game, but you never know. Again, I don't know the rules to it. It's quite possible.
You throw them up.
Yeah, from the picture, though, because there's a picture where they have it set up, it does not look like a dexterity game.
And just doing a little bit of a circle back here, because you mentioned the game before, and all these different rule nuances. You know, you must not follow until you can't follow when you may follow, right? That kind of vibe, it's confusing as hell. Mm-hmm. And yet some of these games, some of these simple games like this flip over kid, including his emoji, elicit the best entertainment factor. And it's really weird, isn't it? Uh-huh. Sometimes I've got a P&P on the shelf, I bring it out and people have a better time than the £100 game I bought a year earlier that's been gathering dust. It's human psychology is
it's a weird thing.
A rabbit hole. Yeah.
I think it kind of stems into the fact, and I know we've mentioned this in passing before on the show, where trick-taking and card games in general, they're smaller. They're tiny boxes. So most of the time people see that and they think, oh, this is going to be a quick, simple game. This will be 10, 15 minutes. The teach will be 30 seconds. I can play. You don't even need to teach me before we play. Let's just play and let's start. We can do this. So when you start to get some of these other trick takers that have all of these exceptions and additional rules and like try to become crunchier and meatier, while a lot of us enjoy them that are in this hobby getting deep into it, we want to see how far we can push that boundary. It's really cool to see, but sometimes when you're trying to show this off to your non-trick-taking friends or not as heavy into it as you, you start to forget that sometimes these simpler ones might be the better ones. Not that they're better as a game, better because you and your group are playing it and having a more enjoyable time.
Yeah, and the laughs that they elicit at the table and the entertainment factor. Of course, there are always exceptions, as I know we'll be talking about soon to that. And sometimes it's good to have more comprehensive ones, because they're great, they're goats, and they deserve a place on the shelf. But a lot of the time, you're right, it's simply smooth, as they say.
Smoother the better.
Well, where do we flip over from there?
Pretty good chunk of time on both those games that we wanted to just give a little extra coverage. And we'll probably mention them again in the future if we play them more, since this was almost sort of a first thoughts as well. So we've only played it recently. I know a lot of the times we end up talking about the same like 15 or 20 games out here. So we're trying to make sure we branch out to others. And
well, like our Echo.
Yeah.
For instance, that's another example of
it. It's been two or three episodes since you've even mentioned it, so I'm getting a little nervous here. You're not...
Oh, no, it's fading into oblivion. What's happening?
I still need to play my copy. I got one. Somebody went to Gen Con, grabbed a copy for me. The new R Eco Plus.
Oh, that comes with another way to play, another way to recycle.
Another way to recycle.
Can't believe I missed that one.
Shame on you. As always, I think this is where we head to our outro, right?
head to the outro. But before we do, I think you wanted to say something about something that's happening at the moment.
Oh, yeah. Other exciting news.
Which is why, Ryan, I said sometimes, we talked about simpler games, sometimes there's always an exception for the shelf. And I'm not going to say what it is because I don't want to steal your thunder. But I think this is a definitive modern classic for me now in my collection of trick takers, so I'll let you roll away.
Absolutely.
With
it. I'm pretty sure everybody listening, if you've ever listened to any of our previous episodes, you already know what I'm going to say, but that game is Trick Takers, and that is because the newest Kickstarter has launched today, September 12th. It is currently live and will be live for 22 more days, where you can back the Haggis and Trick Takers Kickstarter. Obviously, it's a game that Patrick and I have both talked about on here a lot. I have made rules videos for both Haggis and Trick Takers, but I'm so dead in love with Trick Takers. Haggis is great, don't get me wrong. It's a great climbing game, but like, I immediately fell in love with the Trick Takers game, and it's just so cool, and it's just been such a fun experience to be able to bring that game to the English market. The new stuff that I've been able to create for the new version, making the new rule book, just discussing everything with Hirokin, just the whole process has been really, really fun. And it's super, 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 super amazing to see how much support the Kickstarter already has. It's at, currently, as of this moment, it is at $44,054.
Wow.
And that is only, what, like 10 hours into the campaign? Way more than we expected.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing.
So, super exciting.
And it's funny because actually you've catered for all player counts, really, there. I know Haggis does do more than two, but Haggis really, really shines at two. And then, of course, you've got Trick Takers as well at three and four players. And when I talked about culling some of my games, which we won't go into now, my friends always said, well, Trick Takers, that's like your definitive root alternative Trick Taker card game. I was like, yeah, that's not going anywhere. So I would encourage you to have a look at the page if you're listening. And I know that you guys appreciate all the support and thank everybody for it.
And I'm actually super excited as well. There's so much excitement. It's just great. Sort of separate from the Kickstarter is on September 23rd or 24th, whatever the day is, that Saturday, I'm going to be doing an all-day Trick Takers and Kings gaming.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, here with my local trick-taking group. Super looking forward to that.
The Kings of Trick-Taking, as so to speak, as you call yourselves, right?
I guess now we do. Seems like
now it. Now you do. Great, great group name, right? And I'm really quite jealous, Ryan, I've got to say, anyway, and looking at the components and stuff for these games, because I had to paste all of mine up, you know, as we all did once upon a time, but now new ways to get hold and play these. That's something special.
Yeah, the new versions, obviously bias included in it, but they look super awesome. The new Haggis stuff with the Saibepu art, amazing. Nina doing all the Trick Taker stuff, amazing. The new adventure item cards look really cool because the original version had art by Raindrop Memory, and they transferred it over so that all the art was done by Nina. So she redid the new adventure item cards. It looks great.
That's super cool. And I bet Hirokin, when he first released Trick, I nearly said Trick Talkers, I've got to be careful. Trick Takers never dreamed that it would get to this stage and have a success. So it's really, really nice to see as well a Japanese designer now going international, certainly more international than before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Trick Takers is a game that easily deserves it too, with the amount of conversation and love that myself and many others had. The dogs go crazy.
Yeah, that's okay. I was going to say, if people wanted to know, the without getting too heavy into it, because that's probably could be a whole other episode's worth, you've put a lot of time personally as well, working with Hirokin and all the people at PGC into tweaking, finiting, balancing where it needed to a little bit, and clarifying rules. And so if somebody's out there potentially thinking, oh, well, you know, I could maybe find the Japanese edition, maybe you can't because it's sold out, there are some improvements to the English version as well. It's not just a straight reprint, is it?
Yeah, we've done a little bit of tweaking to only a couple of the characters, mainly the collector and the ruler, since those were the two that most people have always had issues with. But for the most part, we try to keep the game the way it is. The game that I fell in love with, the game that PGC fell in love with, was the original game that we wanted to keep intact. But yes, the rule book, I completely overhauled that. I spent a long time recreating that rule book and answering a lot of questions that were sort of becoming an FAQ in the new one that's been like uploaded to BGG. And of course, the changing of some of the components. A lot of the chunky wooden bits in the original game, we've made into cardboard components. And we've made an upgrade pack. So that way, it's a cheaper price point from the beginning. So people who maybe don't really care about upgraded fancy bits can get the regular game with just the cardboard components at a much cheaper price point. But if you want the fancy bits, you can add them on for a little bit more, which would have been the normal price if we put it in the box anyways. But at least it gives people choice.
Yeah, that's really nice. And you've got options there. So absolutely well worth a checkout. Not to be missed if you're curious at all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, to talk about Haggis just for a minute, because it is classic. It's the Haggis.
Sean deserves it. Sean Ross deserves it.
Yeah. I think we also don't need to talk about Haggis as much, because Haggis already gets so much love, like so much more than Trick Takers, at least outside of like our bubble. So obviously, if you're within this podcast or within PGC, you've heard Trick Takers a lot. I'm doing it too now. You're making me do it.
It's coming. There you go.
But like outside of that bubble, so many more people have heard of Haggis. Like, and there's a reason why. Haggis has been around since 2010, and it keeps having newisher versions. It's been reprinted a few times. It's now getting reprinted for this newest edition. And there are reasons why it is still sticking around now. And Haggis is amazing. And the fact that it has new player counts, I love the 4-player team variant. That's super fun. The new way to play 3 players is very similar to Chimera, which is my favorite climbing game. So
otherwise known as Fight the Landlord.
Yeah, Fight the Landlord. Yep, yeah. Exactly. So a lot of the new stuff that's coming in this new edition are really enjoyable changes that are making me like Haggis more and more. And I'm not saying this just to say, oh, well, now you have to go buy the PGC version, because you can still play the new rules with the older version. If you want to play four players, you do need two decks. So you would need a second copy. But you can also play this game with the standard deck of cards.
You can.
So like, there's ways to play it. Just want to say that so I don't seem like I'm pushing the game to buy it.
No, I think what the Sean Ross has tirelessly worked on a living rulebook for Haggis for a very long period of time, where he's established a group of playtesters who've played a lot of this type of game and really taken the time out to make sure what's being released as a final product here is fit for purpose, is really fun and accessible, but it also does testament to Haggis's legacy as originally a two-player game. He's constantly pushing the boundaries. We've seen lots of different types of games from Sean. His straw man mechanics that he really likes as well. So I'm really happy to see Haggis now becoming more available, because it was so hard to find before. And if you're thinking about it, you see a lot, the thing that's talked about a lot is the new scoring variant and the old scoring. Well, this caters for both. So this is the definitive version, as far as I can tell, right? It's fair to say, of Haggis.
Hmm.
And I also like Chimera like you. The fact that this plays like that. Arguably, it's an even more accessible version of Teach You as well, with four players in this Haggis. So very excited, especially for the artwork as well.
Couldn't agree more. It's got all the parts of Haggis that you might know and love from any other version, all put in one box.
You can't go wrong. And opportunity to get these two games at the same time as well. That is magic. But that's a different game, so we won't go into that. Magic. That's Magic the Gathering pun.
I figured you were going to go Magic Trick.
I feel like it.
Because you could at least stuck with Trick Taking.
Yeah, or Magic Trick. At least pivot and keep to Trick Taking rather than going off.
Great Chris Ray game. But instead you went with Magic the Gathering. Which is...
Yes. Sorry, Chris Ray. I haven't actually played Magic Trick yet.
Oh, we got to change that. Play at Trickster's Table.
We've got to change it. Oh, can you?
Yeah.
Is that on there now?
It is on there. Yeah.
Oh, check it out.
You got to do it right now. We're going to end the podcast so you can go do it. All right. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. This has been another episode of Trick Talkers.
Say the magic word. Oh, cool. No, I'm really looking forward to it. That's another Chris Ray game we'll mention in the future, no doubt then. Well, where did we go from there, Ryan? We're going to magic ourselves into the outro here and tell everybody that we thank them for listening to Trick Talkers, because we really do. And thank you in advance for everybody who wants to check out the Kickstarter we talked about, support PGC. And if you want to support us, you can visit our Linktree, which has links to our Twitter, Discord, BGG, Patreon, merch store, and much, much more. The link is linktr.ee, so the tree, /TrickTalkers. Just to clarify the spelling of tree, I thought it was essential. But really appreciate it. Thank you for listening. I've been Horse Boy today. And
I've been Duel Boy.
I kind of ruined that for you. Sorry, mate.
It was coming. Yeah, thanks so much for listening. See you on the next episode.
See you around.